My name's Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And welcome.
Amazing.
I'd like to ask Andy to come forward, please, and read the foreword to the first edition.
Andy.
Morning.
Morning.
My name's Andy and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Good to be here. All right, this is the foreword to the first edition. This is the foreword as it appeared in the first printing of the first edition in 1939. It says, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is important that we remain anonymous because we are too few at present to handle the overwhelming number of personal appeals which may result from this publication. Being mostly business or professional folk, we could not well carry on our occupations in such an event. We would like it understood that our alcoholic work is an avocation. When writing or speaking publicly about alcoholism, we urge each of our fellowship to omit his personal name, designating himself instead as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Very earnestly, we ask the press also to observe this request, for otherwise we shall be greatly handicapped. We are not an organisation in the conventional sense of the word. There are no fees or dues whatsoever. The only requirement for membership is an honest desire to stop drinking. We are not allied with any particular faith, sect or denomination, nor do we oppose anyone. We simply wish to be helpful to those who are afflicted. We shall be interested to hear from those who are getting results from this book, particularly from those who have commenced work with other alcoholics. We should like to be helpful to such cases. Inquiry by scientific, medical and religious societies will be welcomed. Alcoholics Anonymous."
Thank you, Andy. This is an open workshop, and as such, all who have an interest in alcoholism and our program of recovery are welcome. Because this is an open workshop, you need not identify yourself or your reason for being here if you do not wish to do so. Your anonymity will be protected. We ask that you protect ours. While this is an open workshop, membership in Alcoholics Anonymous and in the primary purpose group is limited to those who have a serious drinking problem and have a desire to stop drinking for good and all. There are a number of other fellowships that deal with problems other than alcoholism. We will be happy to try and help you find the one that will meet your needs. I'd like all, please ask all present to please turn down the volume on your mobile phones or pagers to limit disturbances to this meeting. And with that, I'm going to hand the entire proceedings over to the people you want to hear anyway. Chris and Myers from Texas.
It freaks me out. Most of y'all came back. You know, that's a wonderful thing. It may mean that they didn't understand anything we said last night. I mean, we're honored to be here again, and we're gonna. I know the programs say that we got a 2.5 hour chunk here. What we're gonna do is we're gonna do an hour and then take a break because I know some of you old geezers in here like Peter need to kind of pee often, and so we're gonna. We're going to move pretty through here. Here's what we're not going to do today. We're not going to do this big, long, exhaustive step study. I've done weekends like this where we just grind out, you know, 30 hours in one weekend. We're just, you know, every little minutian, dissect every sentence. And I don't think Bill Wilson ever intended for us to do that anyway. But if y'all want to go to something like that, rock on. What we're going to try to do is an angle of we're taking a newcomer through the steps. There seems to be so much confusion about this. Well, how do you take somebody through the steps? And everybody, of course, sponsors a little bit differently. But the idea is to get them from point A to point B at a pretty good clip. And there's, I know there's some in this room that would disagree with that. You know, it's the party line BS in treatment is, you know, well, we didn't get sick overnight, we're not going to get well overnight, which is just crap. You know, this is rubbish. I got well in about 2 weeks. I had a spiritual experience in about 2 weeks as a result of actually getting off my butt and doing some work. Now, guys, don't misunderstand me, because people email me all the time. I was really sick when I got here. It took me about a year to physically heal from some. I detoxed pretty quick, but there were some physical problems. Some people still think I'm still suffering from some of that. I said I wasn't quite wet brain, but I was certainly damp. You know, it was like I had some problems. But there was a financial disorder everywhere. And I mean, it took me a long time to kind of get both feet underneath me. But the spiritual experience, the obsession to drink, left very quickly. Not as a result of my wanting it to, but as a result of my willingness to follow some directions. So that's kind of what we want to talk about today. And some of you are going to be kind of taken aback. Well, it seems like they pushed through those steps pretty quickly. We did. This is not rocket science, folks, and we've got to stop making it that way. It's the big laugh. If y'all ever come to Texas, I'll show you. I've got an 82-page 4-step guide sitting on my desk, and I just take it to set coffee and spill stuff on, you know, on my desk, because I've never cracked it except to open it and say, "Is it really 82 pages?" It freaks me out. Can you imagine this little guy sitting in a meeting, he's detoxing like a big dog, and you drop this 82-page guide down on him? You know, he just cut his throat and just commit suicide. Like, what are you asking me to do? You know, so I had trouble just introducing myself, for heaven's sakes, when I got here. And so I'm so honored to be here. We've got some handouts over here, and you guys can come up after break and pick them up. We didn't print 100 of each, so if you're like in a group of 3 or 4 people, maybe y'all want to pick one, a designated handout picker-upper, and then y'all can make copies and take them back to you and make a gazillion copies of it. We just never know how many to do, and they're kind of heavy to be hauling around. They're pretty good copies of some pretty neat stuff that we've collected about first step stuff, and there's just some good stuff. I've got some little issue man buttons some of y'all have asked me for. Y'all take a handful of those, Oh, that's just some great. I don't know. Free shit. People like that stuff. I don't know. I also brought the infamous rubber stamp. And this circle triangle, I want to mention to you real quick. Peter was telling me that they're in the British books, in the English. They're not in most books out there. In the United States, in the American copies, they've taken the circle triangle out on the title page of the original big book in the first printings up through the third printing. They had a little circle triangle on this page, and this is how they finally kind of qualified me. I want to talk a little bit about that. When I first got back in 1987, they subsequently had copyright infringement problems, and the United States figured it was better to just take it out of the book instead of trying to defend our right to use it, which I thought was don't get me started. I don't even want to go there. But it was a sad deal they did. Anyway, I've got this little rubber stamp, and if you happen to have a big book and you'd like it stamped in the front, man, y'all come by and we'll just stamp you and put them all over that. Because one of the things that we were talking about, I know people in the States have got it tattooed on their deals. It was one of the things we were talking about last night is this thing called untreated alcoholism, and we'll touch a bit on that this morning again. But this untreated alcoholism is like, I stop drinking and I think I'm going to get better, and I start to get worse, because the problem is not the alcohol, the problem is the untreated alcoholism. You follow? If I stay in all three parts of this program, you can see where we're at with it here. I think most of y'all, can y'all see that? Can y'all, it's just, let me move this. Can you see that? A little better. This circle triangle, there's all three parts. We have a three-part program solution to treat a three-part disease. There's a physical part that's wrong with us. There's a mental part that's wrong with us, and a spiritual part that's wrong with us. And I've got the sheets up here too that kind of explain it more in depth. But I never understood why I couldn't stay sober. And when I finally got there in 1987, the first night I was in there, an old geezer opened up a big book and he says, "Chris, let's find out why you keep relapsing." And a bunch of y'all sitting in this room right now are having problems staying sober. If some of you are, it's because you're not in all three parts of this program. If you're in all three parts, you cannot relapse. This thing that's painted in treatment centers that recovery is such a nebulous tentative thing that if everything goes just exactly right, you can stay sober. Every day is a day I could relapse. That is so much rubbish. That is crap. That's not what the big book says. But y'all understand? Listen, folks, I'm a part of the treatment center industry, and the treatment centers want you to get well. They just don't want you to get too well. So what he did was he showed me on the title page of this book, he showed me the title, and he says, Chris, what does recovery mean to you? Recovery. And I heed and hawed around because I couldn't tell him. You'll follow? He says, Chris, it's the 12 steps. Let me ask you a question. Have you worked all 12 steps? And I remember that night saying, well, I've worked the steps to the best of my ability, because I've said that all, you know. He said, Chris, let me kind of bring it down here for you. Let me kind of simplify this for you. I'm going to ask you some yes and no questions, and I want a yes and no answer. That's what he said. You think, well, that's pretty rigid. And he was smiling when he said it, but he didn't want an essay, because that's what it is. I want to talk and rationalize and justify why I haven't worked all 12 steps. I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous calling myself an alcoholic for 7 years, but I don't anymore know what it is to be an alcoholic than the man in the moon. You'll follow? That's where the confusion comes in. He says, Chris, have you or not? I says, no, I have not. And he took a big old X. Pissed me off. I have suffering from low self-esteem. That just hurt me. Okay. He says, go to the next part. He says, what does unity mean? What is this unity part? And I says, that's meetings. Absolutely. Unity. I take my body. I take my mind to the recovery part. I take the body to a meeting. And I go, that's right. And meeting makers make it. He says, Chris, I know it. I've seen you up in North Texas going to lots and lots of meetings. You got that. You with us?
He get a little check.
You know how we do. Puff up a little bit, you know. Chris, what's the third part? Service. What's AA service? He says, oh, well, you know, it's emptying ashtrays and making coffee. And he says, no, that's not the service. That's a piece of it. Our service is to carry the message to the alcoholic who's still suffering. But you haven't worked the 12 steps, the recovery part, so you have no message to carry. I knew what he was going to do. No. We take our awakened spirit, we turn around and go help somebody else. You're not doing that, Chris. How many people have you sponsored in 7 years?
None.
Thanks for having a free ride. Y'all follow? This he said, you're not in three parts, you're in one part. It's like a three-legged stool. Guys, you could get on a you could do exercises on a three-legged stool and be perfectly okay. Cut one leg off. You better be able to balance pretty good. Cut two legs off. You're going to fall on your butt. And that's exactly what we do in recovery. Guys, there's only two reasons that any of us in this room will ever relapse. One is we don't know what the problem is. And two, we don't know what the solution is. Y'all follow? What happens if my kid dies? What happens if this? What happens if that? No, it doesn't. In this context, it does not matter. There's only two reasons you're going to relapse. You don't know what the problem is. You don't know what the solution is. Y'all with us? Today, that's what we're going to talk about, a quick, fast way to get these cats connected to the solution. The only thing worse than drowning, folks, is doing it and not knowing it. And that's what we have. Our fellowship is full of people who sit in these meetings and they call themselves alcoholics, but they don't any more understand what it means to be an alcoholic than the man in the moon. You follow? This is why it drives me crazy when we spend too much time in meetings talking about our story. Let me talk about what happened to me. And it's like, again, we talked about last night. Up to a point, this is quite beneficial. We need that in order to identify. Make sense? I'm not going to listen to you for a second until I think you know what I'm talking about. So you share a little story with me, and I identify that you know your business. Now I want to go talk about the solution. I don't want to keep hearing you tell your same stupid, boring story over and over again. Because that's what it is. It's stupid, boring, quite old after a while. The old timers, if you read the archival literature, talk about it. They talk about it. Dr. Bob wrote about it. He said, gee, I don't know what all this big deal about telling our story. We didn't sit in meetings and tell our stories. There was only one place we did it, and that was from the podium when we were sharing our story. That's a very important place to do that. And in a 12-step call, you need to do that. I cannot do a 12-step call on somebody who's drinking and not tell my story and expect to get anywhere. I have to be able to share a little you know, I see a guy at Denny's. Do they have Denny's in France? No. Little coffee shop having dinner, you know, and he's fighting with a ketchup bottle and he can't get it out, you know, and he's a mess. And I go sit down next to him. Have you found God? Listen, you know, I'm going to walk away from that table with that ketchup bottle stuck up my butt. You know, I mean, if I sat down with him and said, you know, about 15 years ago, I sat at this very same table and had the same fight with that ketchup bottle. You know, this drinking's pretty crazy, isn't it? And we start sharing a little bit, and pretty soon I've got his little interest, and he's laughing a little bit, and I'm laughing a little bit, and then I'm fixing to go set the hook and tell him about God. I'm going to get to God. I'm going to get to the solution. I'm going to tell him about Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm not going to lead with that. You'll follow? That's all we're trying to do is identify and get these guys' interest. So that's kind of what we're coming from. Let me turn this over. This is issue man. It can be here. Issue woman. Some of you French girls, we should have made those a little bigger, I think. But this is a Texas. Okay, never. Also want to mention, you guys, you feel free to ask questions in this. And here's why we want to do those questions. If you would rather catch us at a break and ask us questions, you're more than welcome to do that. And if it's really, we'll mention it in the next start. If you want to ask a question, feel free to do that, and I'll repeat it so that it'll show up on the CD. But what we don't want to do is get into a pissing contest with who's got the longest story in here. Because all of y'all seem to be enabled to just ask a question. Y'all know what a question is? It's got a question mark after it. It's one sentence. It doesn't have a lead-in, six paragraph, and then the question. Let me tell you the history of AA in Denmark, and then I'm going to ask a question. I'm fascinated. Let's do that down later after over a coffee, okay? Because we just simply don't have the time. In 1987, I told you last night I tried to commit suicide, and I was like, there was nothing in me that wanted to die, guys. I mean, I had a great family, I just did not want to feel the way I was feeling anymore. And I'd done everything I could possibly do to not drink. And I'd done 10 years of therapy, and I was taking 7 pills a day, antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication, lots of medications I was taking. Those medications were harder for me to get off of than the alcohol was hard. It was just unbelievable. And I've got my own soapbox about that. But I've been in AA for 7 years and sitting in meetings because that's what the old geezers were telling me. And I agree with what Myers said. Could I have taken a little more initiative and found out a little bit more about this? Absolutely. But, you know, for everyone that would say, you know, Chris, you might want to do the steps, that somebody else was saying, don't worry about the steps. Just come to meetings, don't drink, and everything is going to be okay. And I'm believing them. And I'm just saying it's one of the things that gets me in trouble from the podium, because I know a lot of people tell the newcomer that. It's a good way to interact with a newcomer, but not really have to get your hands dirty. Keep coming back. Thanks for nothing. You know, it's like... Because if I'm a real alcoholic and I just keep coming back, nothing's going to happen. Y'all follow? It's like me just keep coming back to the gym. Nobody bothered to say you have to go upstairs and lift weights, you know. And this is what you get. You know, you actually got to do something. We're a spiritual program of action. That's what this is about. It's a spiritual program of action. And it is not some kind of a chicken shit self-help program. This is a spiritual program of action, but nobody bothered to tell me that. The AA meetings that I was going to at the time was in the mid-80s at the heyday of the treatment center industry in the United States. I could talk for an hour about how that all came about, but the truth is, up in North Texas, they were cranking them out by the thousands out of these treatment centers. Now, a lot of these treatment centers weren't explaining what alcoholism and drug addiction was anything. After all, a drug's a drug's a drug. It's all the same thing. No, it's not, but we're going to teach you that it is. And you're going to come into these meetings and talk about anything you want. Alcoholics Anonymous could have made a stand at that point and says, excuse me, this is not a process group. This is a place where we study and learn about the steps so that we can turn around and go help another brother and sister get well. But we didn't do that. We sucked under trying to be helpful to everyone and turned our back on the problem. Make sense? Now, Alcoholics Anonymous did that. And AA's got to take some of the responsibility for our meetings going into the toilet. We allowed that to take place. We need to stop allowing that to take place. That night in 1987, the old geezer sat down, and that night and the next morning, they explained to me for the first time what it was to be an alcoholic. Y'all understand the term qualifying someone? If I went to buy, wanted to look at one of these big old houses on the hill over here, the realtor, first thing would, he would qualify me first and find out. Basically, he would find out if I had any money or not, because he ain't even driving up that hill if I just want to go look at this house. Do you have the ability to buy this house, I'll take it and show it to you. You follow? And that's exactly what we stopped doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And our fellowship grew and grew and got bigger and bigger. But half the people that were coming into the rooms didn't even need to be here. I got to say, I'm watching the clock, guys. I know this offends some of you. I'm an alcoholic if I say I'm an alcoholic. No, you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous if you say you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But unless you walk like a duck, quack like a duck, you ain't a duck. You follow? And that's the problem in treatment centers. We've got a whole lot of people in there that are ducks that think they're cats. And it's our job is to kind of reel them back in and try to get them back on track. So it says that's the biggest deal. That's our biggest job with the newcomer. If you're sitting down with a new guy or one man or woman and they want to know, just don't say welcome. Keep coming back. Here's the cost. Just you need to qualify them and find out. Do you even need to be here? Am I dealing with an alcoholic, or am I dealing with somebody that's just severely depressed with some antisocial behaviors attached to it? Because they look a lot like us. They drink a lot like us. But they're not us. Y'all with us? Let me stay with you, because there's some people shaking their head. You, in order to be an alcoholic, you have to exhibit certain symptoms. Now, these symptoms are the same in everybody, and that's the truth. Young people back here, old people back here, that we're, you've got a 19-year-old girl, and you've got a 90-year-old man, and we're all going to have different circumstances in our life. You'll follow? We're going to drink a little different, blah, 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 but there's certain things that are going to be absolutely identical. That's how we can identify this as a disease, because it's the same. Black, white, gay, straight, Yankee, rebel, southern, I don't care, same thing. And that's what we have to look at. But we've, over the years, Bill Wilson in the first 100 pages describes the alcoholic. He paints a picture. Back over in the back of the book, I forget the exact page, it wouldn't matter anyway, where the first meeting with Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, he talks about Dr. Bob and he says he had a great desire to stop drinking, but he didn't fully understand what it meant to be alcoholic. And that's the problem that we have in our fellowships today. We got a lot of people sitting in here that don't even understand what it is to be an alcoholic. What makes you an alcoholic? I drink too much. It's not quite it. Because a lot of hard drinkers out there drink too much. A lot of people consume too much alcohol, but given reason, good reason, it talks about in the book, they can stop on their own power. If you can stop on your own power, the big book says you're not one of us. You follow? And again, you're welcome. If you want to call yourself an alcoholic to be a part of this group, you're more than welcome to do that. All I'm saying is, you better know who you're working with. And again, Myers has said this 100 times, I'm not so concerned with whether you sneak in the door and get to come in here and get a free ride. You with me? I'm worried about the people that you end up sponsoring and don't bring through the work properly downstream. You may not be an alcoholic, 30 years sober, killing people with your crap, but the little guy that you're sponsoring is. You follow? And you're shortchanging him by not letting him do the work and get well. And it's the same story. He relapses. The first thing everybody wants to do is just dump it back in their lap. Well, he didn't stay sober. I mean, I hear it in meetings all the time. I was in AA for 10 years and never did the work. Yes? Then we need to look at this. You need to look at this. Is it possible to stay sober 10 years without doing the work? Yeah. But the disease is progressive in nature, folks, and it's going to end up grinding you up. More of us commit suicide statistically in sobriety than we do out there drinking. Now, why is that? Because the problem is not the drinking. The problem is the untreated alcoholism. You with me? Okay.
I got a little booger right there. No, I just...
From... Y'all can take notes. Booger, that's a French word. I learned it last...
No, here.
Here. From the doctor's opinion up in the front of the book, from the doctor's opinion up to page 23, Bill Wilson is trying to explain to us and talk to us about what happens when we have alcohol in our body. The physical phenomena called craving that Dr. Silkworth starts to talk about. He was a neurologist, I believe, the information that I had for about 16 years at Towns Hospital. What he ended up witnessing was that the same similarities happened with the old geezers and the young people and the black people and the white people. They all developed this same symptom. Once they started to drink, it was less likely that they could stop on a dime. You'll follow? It's not that every time I started to drink, I drank until I blacked out. But as the disease progressively got worse, it was less and less likely for me to be able to stop once I started. Can we get on that same page? Guys, the problem is not that I drank a little bit. The problem is that I got squashed. I tried to drink up half of France. That's the problem, okay? Okay, why? My first wife used to ask that question. Was, why can't you drink like a normal person? Because I'm not boring like you. I don't know what to tell you. And we try to rationalize and justify. You know, I'm a very complicated individual. You know, I'm a very... My intellect, you know, I mean, I. The truth of the matter is, I don't know. But he began to see this phenomenon called craving. I can go months and months and months and not drink until I put something in my system. That's what I was talking about last night. What we're starting to see in the treatment centers is people coming back in having relapsed around prescription medication, you know, prescribed by doctors that should know better that don't. You with us? And I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable if you're taking that medication. But I'm just saying you have to be careful with sleep medication, with pain medication, anything that kind of changes the way you feel. And it's different for everybody. I can take some kind of antihistamines, but Patty can't. Patty takes it, and you would have thought she just did a big shot of speed. It changes her different than me. When I want the house cleaned, we give her... And she just vacuums a lot. So we've got this physical piece, this physical phenomenon called craving that the doctor's opinion talks about. But nobody ever really explained that to me. Most everybody understands it. Doctors, lawyers, probation officers, a lot of people that I talk to understand this. You alcoholics, once you start to drink, you can't control how much you put in your body. You are truly powerless over it after you put it in your system. And everybody nods their head. This is the party line stuff that we teach everybody in treatment. I don't care if they're in treatment here in France or in the United States or Canada or Denmark. It's the same. Once you put it in your body, you are powerless over this substance. This is where everybody, the divergent roads, this is where everybody splits. My book, from 23 to 43, talks about this word called choice. You'll follow? This is the most controversial piece of info that I'm going to give you all day long. This is the one that everybody wants to split hairs with, and yet Bill Wilson spends 20 pages explaining it beautifully. Again, these page numbers may be different in your books, but he spends these pages explaining this thing called choice. Before I put this in my system, I have this mental piece in me that tells me to go ahead and put it in there. It's a psychotic thought the book talks about. It's a mental blank spot that says it's okay to continue to use this chemical. Everybody's comfortable with this physical piece. That's why in treatment we spend 90% of our time trying to get the newcomer to not put it in your body. You follow? We try to keep you away from slippery places and slippery things. You can't go those places because they might trigger you and you might just start to drink. You'll follow? This is all well and good, but it doesn't take us far enough. If we leave out the mental piece, and most of you do, I'm telling you from emails and correspondence, most of you do. I know they do in the United States. I talked to a man the other day. He introduced himself in a meeting like this. I know he's 19 years sober. He says, "My name's so-and-so, and I got up this morning and chose not to drink." And I'm sitting there. I turned around. And I said, no shit. Huh. That's the stuff I listened to for 7 years, folks. I'm getting up in the morning and choosing not to drink. And by lunch, I've changed my mind. Y'all follow? And this is the problem. The big book calls this mental blank spot, this insanity. If you really loved your family, you'd stop. You're right. And I'd make a decision to stop. And a week later, I'm drinking again. I didn't choose to drink. I chose not to do the things necessary to get spiritually connected. You follow? It's a form of mental insanity, folks. That's what makes this thing so deadly. Any idiot... We were talking last night at dinner. Worst things we'd ever eaten, blah, blah, blah. Mine was monkfish. I don't lie. I cleaned a monkfish one time when I was in the kitchens in Atlanta. And they said, and I started to clean this fish, and I grabbed hold of this fish, and I pulled, and all this snotty stuff came off, and it was purple, and I had it all over the front. And I went, you know, and I went to the chef, and I said, listen, I can't do this. And he said, cool, give it to somebody else. I'll get you something else to do. And that's the last time I've come within 10 feet of a monkfish. Given sufficient reason, can Chris Raymer stay away from monkfish? Absolutely. Given sufficient reason, can Chris Raymer stay away from alcohol? Even though I've promised you I'm going to stay away. I promised the judge. I promised that woman. I promised my employer that I wasn't going to do it. And I go back to it. You'll follow? This is why everybody wants to make this a behavioral problem. Why did you go back? Why did you go back? The true answer, because I'm an alcoholic. Everybody thinks when we talk about this, what we're doing is we're letting the newcomer off the hook. Well, you tell them, here's what the book says. Here's what the book says. The fact is, this is on our page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable, at certain times, to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory and suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. You'll follow? Back over in the United States, back in the 70s and the early 80s, they used the aversion therapy. Y'all know that? They still use it in Russia, I understand, a lot. And the aversion therapy was quite simple. They'd hit you with antabuse, give you a chemical that would make you sick when you drank, and then they would give you all the damned alcohol you wanted to drink, and you would get sick twice a day. Big communal stainless steel. Everybody would just have a puke-a-thon, you know, and everybody would puke, and it was like, oh, that's disgusting. Yes, it is, and we're going to do it again this afternoon, and we're going to do it in the morning, and we're going to do it in the afternoon, and it was just like a week, and they would do this after a period of time, and then you would associate alcohol, puke, bad. You with us? This form of treatment worked beautifully for hard drinkers. Hard drinkers, moderate drinkers, they never touched another drop. They're all out of business in the United States because they simply were ineffective with real alcoholics. We cannot stop given any reason. We can stop for short periods of time, but then we can't bring to the forefront of our mind the problem. You with us? That's why it drives me crazy back in the olden day in treatment when they used to throw our families up in front of us. Don't you love your kids? Boy, you want to talk about disrespectful. Be the same thing as listening to your significant other puke in the bathroom and you'd knock on the door and say, honey, if you really loved me, you'd stop that. What? How are you going to stop? What? But it's the same thing. I can't no more stop this than the man in the moon. I am truly powerless. This is why this is fatal. I will drink this crap until the day I die. Unless the book says I have a spiritual experience. That seems to be the grinder right there. Hard drinkers and hard druggers look, hard drinkers and real alcoholics look exactly alike, folks. Out there drinking, we our stories will jive a lot there too. But when you want to get down to it, you look at these two words right here: control and choice, and that's what we're looking at. You follow? If you want to qualify a newcomer, ask him point blank. When you start to drink, have you ever lost control and drank more than you intended? We give everybody one bonus puke. You follow? When you're new. Because we're stupid when we're little kids. When we're young, we don't know. And the first time we get around something or away from home and we can drink whatever we want, we usually drink to everybody. They drink too damn much. And they throw up, puke straight up, okay? The question is, did you ever do that more than once? Yes, we have something we have to look at here now, guys. Normal people don't do that. My little sister says it all. No, thank you. We did it at her wedding. We said, Lisa, you want another drink? It's free.
She was paying for it. And she says, no, thank you. I'm starting to feel it. So, me too. You want another drink? So I don't understand. My body's all geared up. I'm ready to go. She's stopping because she knows two more and she's going to be throwing up. And she doesn't want to do that on her nice night. So, understand? You combine that. That physical allergy, though, a lot of people are allergic to alcohol. When I drink alcohol, something in it, the hops or something makes me sick, I just don't drink alcohol. It's the same with us. Okay, then don't drink. Oh, well, I can't. I always drink. Now we got something to look at. You're going to tell me you chose to drink? Given sufficient reason. You just drank up last month's rent. You just got a DWI. You just went back to treatment. You just made promises, blah, blah, blah. Can you stop and stay stopped? Well, what does your experience show you? You look at your truth based on your experience. No, I can't stop. I can stop for 2 or 3 weeks, but I always go back. Welcome. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. We got your solution. Here's the piece that nobody wants to talk about. The spiritual piece. We're going to hit this today, guys. We're not going to hit it too hard because it doesn't need to be hit too hard. Man, I don't care who you pray to. I don't care what's going on. But the book, you can't deny it, talks about it. The spiritual malady, the spiritual illness is as real as can be. And it's this internal condition that causes alcoholics and addicts to drink. Guys, at 17 years old, somebody gave me a bottle of Boone's Farm apple wine, and I lit up like a neon sign. Y'all understand that? I felt good inside. I'm not walking back across that field after drinking that bottle of wine and saying, oh my gosh, the spiritual malady that's been kicking my ass all my life has been treated. I feel great. It was none of that. It's like, I don't know what this is about, but I'm going to find out some more of this. This is pretty good. Everybody's had the same experience with the alcohol. It makes me feel okay inside. And it wasn't until 1987, 7 years in AA, all those years in therapy, nobody talked about this. What's wrong with Chris Raymer is not the booze. This is not the problem. I can quit. I've done it 1,000 times. I can stop on a dime. I can't stay stopped because this internal condition, this spiritual malady, starts to kick my butt. This is the symptoms of the spiritual malady. This is what the internal condition looks like, unmedicated. You with me? Irritable, restless, and discontent. Can y'all identify with that? Think about it. Irritable. Oh, last week I stopped drinking and this week I'm throwing cars. Everybody's pissing me off. Irritable, restless, can't sit still. You ever seen a newcomer in a meeting? They're like a caged cat. Just can't, discontent. Nothing's good enough. Just top sales in my company. Big awards all over the wall and it's not good enough. The book talks about a feeling of uselessness. The bedevilments on page 52. Can y'all get that? You're drop dead gorgeous, and yet you're harming yourself. This low self-esteem. It's what the book talks about. No sense of direction. I want to move here. I want to move there. I want to go back to school. And then by lunch, I'm going to start a new business instead. And I can't get focused. It's why we drive the women crazy, our dates. It's like, oh my gosh, I thought you said you loved me. I do, but that was last week. We're going to move on now. You know, because I can't... No sense of direction. This internal discomfort. There's one line on 52 that says, it sums it up. It says, we were unhappy. And that was me. How many of us in this room, though, guys, have spent a lifetime trying to find out what's going to make me happy? How much money's enough? How much sex is enough? How big a house do you need? And we spend a lifetime trying to fix this internal condition. We got these cats coming into this beautiful hospital where I work who, on the outside, would look like their lives are perfect. But you talk to them and they're suicidal. All they want to do is die. Y'all follow? So we can get them detoxed. That's the first piece. We get them past the physical, out the phenomena called craving. But we can't do jack to get them past this. They don't leave early, guys, when they're going through this. They stay there. Their little ego is about this big at that point. They're going to do anything we ask you to ask them to do. Y'all follow? They're all beat up. Chris, come over here. And they move. Come over there. And you're just following instructions. You know, just show up to group. Let's go. Come on now. Let's go. Hurry up. Okay, I'm coming. Everything's fine. And about 4 days in, they start to get past this physical stuff. And all of a sudden, this ego starts to get a little bigger. Now all of a sudden, you know it's happening because they'll look up and they'll see a girl. You know, before now, it's been focused. God, sobriety. I'm God, sobriety. Now all of a sudden, a girl walks by and is like, huh? With danger, we got problems. Now all of a sudden it's, I can smoke anywhere I want. I just spent a fortune coming to this place. You can't tell me what to do. Now, have y'all worked with guys like that? They come in, they're willing. I'm willing to go to any length to get sober. I will do anything. You can have my babies. I just help me get sober. And about 2 months in, they won't even return your call. Where were you last night? Oh, I didn't need to go to that meeting. There was a movie on I hadn't seen in years. And where did the willing to go to any length go? Y'all follow? It went the way of the ego. What's happening is this internal condition's coming back and it's kicking their butt. You follow? Guys, I'm going to say this and sit. This internal condition must be treated. It's like a pressure cooker. You put that thing down, clamp it down real tight, turn the heat up underneath it, and you can take this for a short period of time, and then you will explode. You will come up with some stupid excuse to put something in your body that changes the way you feel. You follow? You'll eat a pill that you've never even tried before. I remember one night walking in, I said, what are those? And he says, those are horse tranquilizers. And I said, horse tranquilizers? I was about 2 weeks sober away from the alcohol. And I didn't have any alcohol, no dope, no nothing like that. I said, horse tranquilizers? What are they? He said, yeah, then this is good stuff. And I said, man, you'd have to be crazy to eat a horse tranquilizer. And 2 hours later, I'm back there knocking on his door. You got any more of those things? Oh, my gosh. Why would you do that? Because you've got to have something to treat this internal condition. You with us? Everybody says, well, I just wanted a party. No, you wanted this internal condition to get fixed. This is what happens to us. This is why in 1935, when Alcoholics Anonymous started, they published the book in 39. It was 35 when the two guys got together. We started seeing the first big purge of this disease because it was the first thing that treated this. The medical fraternity spent forever trying to get us detoxed, but how frustrating to continue. Bill Wilson was in Towns Hospital on his third time is when he finally got sober. You with us? He left AMA both times. He'd gone to Towns Hospital twice before. He'd left both times early because this ego returned. He got detoxed, felt like he was great. I don't know why everybody's making a big deal of this. I'm out of here. And split. You with us? And the last time he got hold of the little cat, Ebby came and 12-stepped his butt in the hospital and started showing him how to work the steps. He had the rudimentary understanding. He was working on his ninth step in Towns Hospital when he had his barn-burning spiritual experience. You'll follow? Never to drink again. Everybody thinks we're going to learn all this information and blah, 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 and have this spiritual experience. The truth is you're going to get off your butt, you're going to start doing this work, and somewhere between 1 and 12, you're going to have an experience with God. It's a given. I don't believe in God. Work the steps. Shut up, please, and work the steps. I know that makes some of you uncomfortable. We get people get up and walk out of here when they find out we're talking about this. And I'm sorry, but I mean, how closed-minded can you get? Work the steps. You will have a necessary spiritual experience strong enough to overcome the obsession to drink and drug. And these first time these guys explained this to me, I sat back with tears in my eyes and said, geez, in 7 years in AA, nobody ever explained this to me. Nobody ever explained what alcoholism is. You with me? And every time I'd go to another meeting and you would tell a worse war story than me, I would sit back a little less uncomfortable and say, oh my gosh, maybe I'm not an alcoholic. You follow? Stop looking at the drama. The two questions you need to ask in first step are this right here. The unmanageability that the book is talking about in first step has got nothing to do with my external world. It's got to do with this internal world. Spiritual malady, untreated alcoholism, unmanageability, all the same thing. You'll follow? That's good stuff. You got anything you want to add to that?
No, let's go ahead and take a break. We'll pick it up right after we get up.
Let's go drink.
Fifteen minutes is fine. 15 quick minutes.